Before I begin, I'm going to ask God to set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others, especially let go of all my old ideas so I can live on your truth. Guide me tonight so I can carry your message. Amen. Okay. If you are coming Wednesday and you were here last Wednesday, bring your handout on the second step proposition exercise on fear. If not, I'll have more copies. If you've never done this exercise or heard about it, please join us on Wednesday night. It's on the site, on the PDF, under Resources of Recovery. Yesterday, we covered the spiritual axiom in the 12 and 12. The talk will be out this next week. Well, I'll have to put them up. I wrote a thought on recovery. It's number 23 on the site, experiencethebigbook.org, on spiritual axiom. And you might read that and see if you find that helpful. A lot of people have read it and sent me comments. They thought it was helpful. Next Saturday, we're going to be covering step 11. We finished the big book on up to page 88, 10, 11, and we're going to cover step 11 in either the steps we took or carry this message or the 12 and 12. I haven't decided yet. God hasn't revealed to me the plan yet. And that'll be Saturday. Tonight, we're on finishing up There's a Solution. And we're going to look at the spiritual experience. I'm going to review on page 27 to put the last two pages of the chapter in perspective. This is where Roland Hazard in 1932 or 3 went to Switzerland to Dr. Carl Jung for treatment of his alcoholism. He was a very wealthy man, Roland Hazard, from a prominent family. He spent a year with Dr. Jung. He understood the inner workings of his mind so completely that relapse was unthinkable. Yet, he got drunk within a few days. He went back to Dr. Jung, and he told Dr. Jung he drank again. And he drank, and so on page 27, we're going to see what Dr. Jung tells him, and then it carries into the last two pages of the chapter, and then we're going to read the appendix on the spiritual experience at the back. And it's only a few pages, and we should have some time for discussion. This is powerful stuff. So it says, some of our alcohol readers may think they can do without spiritual help. Get the subtle hint there? Let us tell you the rest of the conversation. Now remember, this book was written in 1939. There was no AA. There were three groups. And this was meant to be read and then to be followed and done and then carried on. So this book is specific directions on how they recovered. So the doctor said, you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. I talked about what that is last week. That's someone who's unable to see the truth about alcohol, has no power over alcohol. I've never seen one single case recover where that state of mind existed to the extent that it does in you. I'm in the second paragraph on page 27. So Roland's not feeling good at this point. So he says to the doctors, they're no exception. And then here is where Dr. Jung had the humility to go outside of the boundaries of his traditional psychiatric and make this observation to Roland Hazard. So this is the solution to alcoholism from Dr. Jung. In the program we got from the Oxford group, it says, yes, there is. Exceptions to cases such as yours have been occurring since early times. Here and there, once in a while, alcoholics have had what are called vital, vital means necessary for life, vitae, spiritual experiences. And he's going to explain what he thinks these are. These occurrences are phenomena. They're not explainable. They appear to be in the nature of a huge emotional displacement and rearrangement. Something's happened to these people. The ideas and emotions and attitudes, which were the guiding forces of their lives, are suddenly cast to one side. Now, that is a major change for an alcoholic, right? And it's a true change in the way you see things, and it's replaced by a new set of conceptions. The motives begin to dominate them. We go from self-centered, selfish people to God-centered, seeking to serve God and others. He says, in fact, I've been trying to produce such emotional rearrangement within you. With many individuals, the methods which I have employed are successful, but I've never been successful with an alcoholic of your description. Why? Because it's a non-spiritual process he was doing with Roland. He was doing therapy. He was trying to have Roland understand the inner workings of his mind. But that isn't the rearrangement that we need. It has to come from God. Upon hearing this, our friend was somewhat relieved, for he reflected he was a good church member. This hope was destroyed by the doctors telling him that while his religious convictions were good, in his case, they did not spell the necessary vital spiritual experience. And the necessary vital spiritual experience is a change in our whole attitudes and outlook on life. And the central factor of our lives is that we have a relationship with our Creator, remember, upon which we can all agree. And I wrote, convictions without action, the results nil. And I wrote, fantasy is thought without action. And so here was the terrible dilemma on page 28. So this is the problem that Rowan had. And but he became a free man. He went back to the Calvary Church in New York to Dr. Shoemaker. He went to the Oxford Group. He worked the steps. He rescued Ebbe Thatcher from going to prison in Vermont to the asylum. He brought Ebbe Thatcher back to New York in 1934. Ebbe Thatcher was 60 days sober, and then they said, you have to witness. That was the sixth step of the sixth step of the Oxford group. I don't want any more coffee. That was the sixth step of the Oxford group. And he said, I'm going to witness to Bill W. I know somebody who needs help. And he went to Bill W.'s house in his kitchen in November 1934, and we're here today. And that's all described in Bill's story. And then we don't really know what happened to Roland. He stayed sober. There's not a lot in the history about him after that point. So now we come to this powerful paragraph. It says, we, in our turn, we have the same terrible dilemma, right? We have the mind of a chronic alcoholic, and he's never seen a case recover except through a vital spiritual experience. So I'm going to seek the same escape with all the desperation of drowning men. The same escape with the desperation of drowning men. Has anybody ever been to the ocean and gotten in the undertow? And you'll reach out for anything, right? And what I try to see when I meet new people, do they have the desperation of a drowning man? And I think I was given the gift of desperation. We talk about that a lot, right? And the gift of desperation was because of my moment of clarity that I was completely screwed. And I was completely defeated. And my life was hopeless. And you know what? I was okay with it. Because I said, I'm going to give up. And I said, God help me. I didn't fight it. I said, you know, this is the reality of it. And I got down on my knees and I said, God help me. And then I said, I'm willing to do whatever happens. I didn't know what was going to happen then. That was 17 or 18 years ago. But look what's happened to me today. Who would have thought? What seemed at first a flimsy reed, that could be coming to AA. That could be meeting a new person. That could be talking to someone, getting somebody to call you, starting to work with someone. The big book, a flimsy reed, has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. I think that's so true for me. And I heard Josiah say that. And guess what? The loving and powerful hand of God keeps getting stronger. And the more we reach, the stronger it gets. And the stronger it gets, and the more I reach, the further I am from being the desperation of being a drowning man. I still have the desperation to seek God, but I'm not drowning. And guess what we get? We get a new life, a design for living that really works. Now, if you're new, a design for living that really works is not your design. My design for living never worked, and it will never work. And I know that. So I keep seeking the powerful hand of God and his direction. And it does work. Anybody agree with that? This does work. And it works if you work it. We say that every meeting. Now they talk about William James in his book, Varieties of Religious Experience. I tried to read it. I must admit, I didn't have the desperation of a drowning man when I tried to read it. And after I tried to read it, I wanted to drown. He was a brilliant man. And this was in 1906 or something. He went around and tried to, even went to England, and he interviewed people, and he tried to see what was in common. He's a brilliant man. With religious experience, and he indicates a multitude of ways in which men have discovered God. That's what we're trying to do. We want a spiritual awareness, a relationship with our Creator. And the Big Book says, we have no desire to convince anyone that there is only one way by which faith can be acquired. We don't say that we have the only way. What does AA say? If you don't have a way, try this. But AA doesn't say that we're the only way. It doesn't say that you're not going to recover if you don't do what we say in the book. But what it says is if you can't make it and you're drowning, follow these directions and tell us what happens. Do an experiment. And so I love the next line. If what we have learned and felt and seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living Creator. There's no exclusion. Remember, we have the broad highway open to all those who seek Him. There's no barriers. And it says, a living Creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms, which is the whole goal of the deal. But here's the warning. As soon as we are willing and honest enough to try. If you're willing and honest enough to try, it's going to happen. Now, what are you going to try? Well, they suggest the steps. They suggest the directions in the book, but it doesn't mean it's the only way. But I suggest, we had a 90-day birthday, and I suggest keep plowing ahead and get into those steps of action and see how your life changes. Those having religious affiliations will find here nothing disturbing to their belief or ceremonies. There's no friction among us over such matters. We don't care what you believe is your concept of God. It's your concept, and we respect that. And then it says, we think it no concern of ours what religious bodies our members identify themselves with as individuals. Now, I know there's some people get upset when some people mention their concept of God. And they don't think it's appropriate. Well, that's not what it says here. That's their concept. They're allowed to mention that. There is no barrier. It doesn't mean it has to be your concept. Now, we shouldn't try to convince other people that their concept is wrong, because we have no idea what their concept should be. We just need to worry about our concept. Does this make sense? And it said, this should be an entirely personal affair, which each one decides for himself in the light of past associations or his present choice. Not all of us join religious bodies, but most of us favor such memberships. In the following chapter, which we're going to be covering next week, there appears an explanation of alcoholism as we understand it. So that's why I think the chapter more about alcoholism is pretty important to read and understand if you're new. And then a chapter addressed to the agnostic. Now, agnostic is those without knowledge of God. And Joe and Charlie make the point that really all alcoholics are agnostics, because if we don't have knowledge of God, because we've never had a relationship with God, we've ran the world. So you can believe in God but not have a relationship with God. And remember, we start with belief and we end with faith and trust and relationship. That's where the power of the 12 steps are. You could believe in God and then pray all morning, get in your car and run your whole day. And so what we want to, what we're trying to hear is to have the relationship where God's running our day. And we trust that we go to God. And we talked about that yesterday, about the spiritual axiom. Whenever we're disturbed, there's something wrong with us. And we have the emotional hangovers. We have to go to God all the time so that we stay on the beam. And it says, such convictions, no great obstacle to a spiritual experience. Further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recovered. So do you think this would be a good book to read? Yeah. These are followed by 42 personal experiences, the stories of personal experiences. Now they say each individual in the personal stories describes, and I think this is powerful, in his own language and from his own point of view, the way he established his relationship with God. And really, that's what we're supposed to be doing at the meetings. That's what we're supposed to be doing when we do our stories. We're supposed to be talking about how we established a relationship with God, not how we hit bottom through our self-centeredness and destroyed our lives. That may be important, but how we went from there to establish the relationship with God. And it says, the stories are given a clear-cut idea of what actually happened in their lives. So there are two things you're supposed to do. You're supposed to tell how you establish your relationship with God, and then what actually happened as a result of that. And isn't that what you're supposed to do with the new person? It says if you have, on page 23 or something, it says, if you have depth and weight, if your story has convictions, have depth and weight with the new person, if you can tell them how you were powerless over alcohol, your life was unmanageable, how you established your relationship with God and what happened as a result, and somebody's looking at you, then that will get their attention. We're not supposed to tell them what's wrong with them. It's none of our business. We don't know what's wrong with them. But we have to tell them. And so that I think that paragraph is very important. And it says, we consider these self-revealing accounts, hope nobody will consider them in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women, and then it's really subtle, desperately in need. Well, this is not a book for people having a bad day. This is not a book for people who say, well, you know, things are bad at home and she's mad at me and she wants me to quit drinking. I'll go to AA. I'll give it a try or something. This is for people who are desperately in need. We'll see these pages, and we believe that it's only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that they will be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them. I must have this thing. And then I wrote, or else. And I mean, that's the deal. That's what we're supposed to be doing in our meetings. We're supposed to be disclosing ourselves and our problems and how we established our relationship with God and what happened with us. So I think this chapter there, Solution, is very powerful. Now if we'll turn to page 567, we'll do Spiritual Experience. This was put in the second edition because people didn't understand the spiritual experience, because in the big book, it talks about Bill W. having his flashing light moment, and then Bill Dobson, number three, and how some people had a sudden transformation. And so they put this in to explain it. Because remember, it says, somebody mentioned the ninth step prophecies. It said, suddenly we realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves, right? And so Sandy Beach says, well, it could be slowly or it could be quickly, but it's suddenly when you realize it. And then, I don't know about you, but I suddenly realize all day long things that God's doing for me that I could not do for myself. For me, it's usually when I just change my mind about something. I see something differently. I'm willing to let go of my old ideas. It says the term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change, we need a personality change, remember? If our personality doesn't change, nothing changes. What's our personality? How we think, how we act, how we react to things. Sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. But I think for me, when I gave up completely and I had that moment of defeat, that was a pretty spectacular upheaval for me. And I knew I needed help. And I knew I was so desperate, and I know I needed help, that I never questioned it ever again. I've never questioned it. And so in the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. But I think the you do have sudden revolutionary changes, but they're all the time. And the more you take the action of the steps, the more you see things differently. That's why I said the set aside prayer. I have to constantly ask God to help me set aside everything I think I know so I can see things differently. I can let go of my old ideas. What's the result if you don't let go of your old ideas? Nil. And it says, an overwhelming God consciousness followed by once a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among a rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Now, don't use this as an excuse not to work the steps quickly. Well, you know, I have plenty of time. I'm doing the educational variety. No, that's not what they're saying. What they're saying is that you change the way you see things over time, and I think it's the direct result of whatever actions you're taking. Are you praying? Are you meditating? Are you inventory? The more action you're doing, the more work you're doing, the more you will change. And then remember, if you don't continue to change, your sobriety date will. And remember, we're not cured from alcoholism, right? We have a daily reprieve based upon continuing to change our personality from self-centered to God-centered. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life. And it's the change in the way I react to life that's the difference. And the way I used to react was self-centered. And we talked about it, the spiritual axiom. Whenever I'm disturbed, there's something wrong with me, no matter what the cause. And if I'm disturbed, it's because I'm reacting through self-centered glasses. And I have to stop and take off the self-centered glasses and put the God-centered glasses on and see it. And we say the serenity prayer at every meeting, right? God, give me the serenity, the peace of mind, so I can see what I need to change and accept. And so, and remember, it says on page 85, if we're in fit spiritual condition, how will we react to alcohol?
Sanely.
Sanely and normally, the problem has been removed. It doesn't exist. It just happens. And it says, as long as we stay, and if also you won't be fighting everybody and everything and everyone. And so the key is to stay in fit spiritual condition. And then they have the warning. You better, because alcohol is a subtle foe. Because if we stop growing spiritually, our alcoholism continues. And if we fall behind, we never know when that certain time will be when we'll take the next drink. And he says the change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom be accomplished by years of self-discipline. Remember, we talked about God disciplines us, remember, on page 88. He disciplines us because when we're separated from him, we don't feel good, right? And then we have to get back to him to feel okay and be on the beam. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Remember, it says in We Agnostics, the fundamental idea of God is where? Deep down inside all of us. We block it out by what? Calamity, pomp, worship of other things. God's always been there, but I've blocked him out, and I've been conscious of me and what I thought and not conscious of what God thought. And so I want to be conscious. We talk about conscious contact. It says step 11, improve our conscious contact. We read on page 85 that now we have a God consciousness. We have a sixth sense. That's what the deal is. You have something you go to when and you've learned to do that by doing steps 4 through 9. Most of us think that this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of a spiritual experience. One or more religious members call it God consciousness. I think that says it all. Are you aware of a power greater than yourself today? And are you seeking it? And then do you, when you know you're on the left-hand side, do you understand that your God conscious will tell you, get on the right-hand side, Michael? Right? Don't stay disturbed. Don't be selfish. Be kind, loving, patient, tolerant. Then they end with this. Most emphatically, we wish to say that one, any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover. Provided, there's always a provision in the big book, he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. You have to keep all spiritual concepts open. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. I can't imagine an alcoholic would be intolerant or belligerently deny anything. But that's the attitude that defeats us. And guess what? You can have an attitude of intolerant or belligerent denial and not even realize it. It's subtle. It's subtle. It can be, well, I'm not going to come on Sunday night. He talks too much. You know, and then from there, you know, I don't need to go to meetings at all. And then, and so it's very subtle. I remember our ego is always there. It's always waiting to talk to us and tell us things that aren't true. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. I don't see anything in the big book that tells you how smart you have to be to work the steps. Anybody see that? It tells you you could be too stubborn to work the steps, or you could. But it doesn't require you to be brilliant. It just says that we have to be willing, honest, and open-minded. We have to be honest about and completely honest with ourselves, another human being. We have to be completely willing to let go of our old ideas, and open-minded to the principles in this book. And if I close my mind to anything, then that could be enough to keep me from doing it. If I say, no, I'm not going to do that, or I'm closed by, and I do it, and I do it unconsciously, and then I have to check myself and say, well, why did I decide that, and why did I think that? So it's an ongoing process, and it's indispensable. So I said how at one meeting. That's how I started the Sunday night meeting. It was from a resentment. I said, how is how it works. You know, how? Honesty, open mind, and willingness. And somebody said to me, you're wrong. It says it's who. And I said, oh, wow. And I felt really bad. I went home and cried because, you know, everybody in the group thought I was stupid. You know, I said how. And there's no how in the big book. And then I went to a meeting and we read how it works. I said, holy mackerel, there is a how. So anyway, you can call it who or how, but it can't be you. And willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, and they're indispensable. And then here's Herbert Spencer, who was actually an evolutionist. He was a spiritual evolutionist, a societal evolutionist. He was a Darwin proponent. I don't know if you know this. And actually, I don't know that, I heard somebody say that he actually never really said this. But he was a very famous man in the 1800s. There's a principle which is a bar against all information, and which is a proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. And that's the story of my life. And what's fun for me now is to look and see how the things that I had contempt prior to investigate, and then I opened my mind to investigate how they changed my life. And so I wrote, let go of my old ideas. And I think we've really covered this pretty well, the spiritual experience. It's powerful stuff. And now we'll have open up. We have some time. People can talk about their spiritual experiences as the result of this and what it means for them. Thank you, guys. Thanks.